You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. I'm Rick Pearson. It is 7:21 on this Sunday morning. And again, my apologies to everyone. This has been quite a weekend. Literally Friday night with the cancellation of the Trump rally. Dave, I didn't get to sleep till 3 o'clock Saturday morning.
I have been worried about you.
I'm sure you were.
I have, and I was especially worried because, you, as I said to Steve and I said to Jasmine, you are characteristically, you know, in the newsroom here well before the program starts, and we discuss what's coming up and discuss what happened during the week, you know, professionally, and maybe what have what's happened in our lives during the week. But I didn't see you this morning.
I know, and I slept through two alarms.
You did?
I absolutely slept through two alarms.
And you know what you just said about the time change. You're absolutely right. I mean, this is of all the weekends for this to happen.
Yeah, and you know, like I said, I got to bed at 3 o'clock Saturday morning. I was back here at the tower at 9 o'clock in the morning and worked yesterday till about 6 and went home and just crashed.
And it's not over.
And literally, I crashed. Oh, no, it's not over at all. In fact, right after the show at 10:30 this morning, I'll be on MSNBC to talk about some of the events that are going on in Chicago, the political events, and frankly, let you all know about the delegates and all that kind of thing. Yesterday, were you downtown for all the festivities, Dave?
I was not, actually, but I was. I had to be out of the immediate downtown area for
good
most
thing.
Of the day
that
yesterday.
That would have been the best thing for everybody,
I have
I
to
think.
Say, I did consider myself a little bit on the fortunate side because as I was leaving to go out of the area here, everything was just starting to build about 7:30, 8 o'clock yesterday morning.
Well, actually, even Friday night, Friday day, the sidewalks were filled with people. And I never realized, I guess, that the St. Patrick's Day parade and, you know, the aura of it was such a big tourist draw.
It is.
And the sidewalks were filled on Friday. You would have thought everybody took the day off. And then
they did.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. And then on Saturday, it was very goofy downtown, to say the least. And frankly, it was I couldn't wait to escape the downtown. Thousands of people, many young people, I have to say. And I guess if I could sleep late, it's probably for them. If they sleep late on Tuesday, they might miss voting for Bernie Sanders.
As I mentioned to Steve earlier, coming in this morning, it was a little more. There was a little more activity than I usually see around 3:30, 4 a.m. on a Sunday, and there were people, you know, the stragglers still out.
Oh, yes.
Continuing late night, early morning, and going into the next day, you know.
Oh, yes. I could tell still there's, I checked my Uber to get here in a rush, and they were charging two times the normal rate.
Oh, yeah.
Even now here on a Sunday morning.
Sure.
So that's an indication that there's still some stragglers out there as well.
Oh, yeah. And they're just warming up for Thursday. The real day isn't until
this coming Thursday. That's right. They get a second bite of the apple on that.
And we have a primary election right in the middle of it.
Yeah. Yes, I know. Because there's never enough to do in Chicago.
Never. Never.
Oh, man.
At least no one asked me where the water was.
Very, 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 very good.
Oh. To get to see where the river was being dyed green.
Yes.
And can you tell us where the water is?
Actually, someone asked me, how long does the water stay green?
Oh, really? Yeah.
And I said it actually, that bright green is, it's almost a week.
It really is. It really is. I remember my first year in Chicago, I was working in the what is now where the House of Blues is, but it was an office building at Marina City. And we could look out the 16th floor window and look down as they were dyeing the river. That was pretty cool to see.
Oh, yeah. What a great view.
It was a good view.
That's the perfect view.
Yeah. It was neat.
Well, Dave is here to keep us up on the news. Producer Jasmine is fielding your phone calls. You can reach us at 312-981-7200. You can also text us at that same number, 312-981-7200. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin. and on Twitter at Symbol Sunday Spin. Engineer Bob is here to clean up the Allstate Showcase studio after some revelers enjoyed the St. Patrick's Day celebration, of course. And remember, if you have to tune away, or like me, you slept through the alarm, you can find all of our shows on WGNRadio.com. You can also get our podcast at iTunes by searching for Rick Pearson. Well, coming up today, we've got a great show. After Dave brings us the 7:30 news update, we've got a special pre-election roundtable. Joining me in studio will be my retired Tribune colleague, formerly part of the political team of the Tribune, Bob Sector. On the phones will be Tom Bowen. He's a Democratic consultant and strategist, and we'll also have Pat Brady, who's the former chairman of the state Republican Party. We've got so much to talk about, the cancellation of the Trump rally becoming national news, the primary coming up on Tuesday. We'll go through the entire ballot to talk about everything. And if you have any questions about anything that's on the ballot, 312-981-7200 is our number. We're going to take a break. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN.
This is The Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Welcome back to The Sunday Spin, 7:35 Central Daylight Time, which I'm going to keep repeating the time because obviously it didn't work for me this morning, but welcome back to The Sunday Spin.
We are coming up on 7:36 now.
Okay. You want to count it down, Dave?
7:35 and 50 seconds.
Yeah, right. So, yes, but this is pre-election Sunday. There is so much going on in the political world, and there's so much to talk about. And joining me here in the studio is my good friend, great buddy, the retired member of the Tribune political team, Bob Sector. Bob, thank you for joining me this morning.
Oh, good to be here. It was. I was wondering as I was driving and listening to Steve Dale if we were going to get in here and then you were going to be late, and then eventually your call was going to come in and say you were canceling the show. People are going to get raucous, say go in peace, and then we'd start beating the crap out of each other. But what the hell?
waiting for the protest to start. Yes. That would be nice, actually, if people would protest if I couldn't make the show. But nevertheless, we move forward. We've got on the phone Tom Bowen. He's a Democratic political consultant, and Pat Brady, the former state Republican chairman. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me.
Good morning. Good morning, Rick.
Obviously, Trump is the big news, and the whole issue of Friday night. And as I said earlier, I didn't get to bed till 3 o'clock in the morning on Saturday with all of the activity that was going on surrounding this event. And yesterday, Donald Trump made his first public appearance since that Friday night cancellation of the rally at the University of Illinois at Chicago. He was out in suburban Dayton, Ohio, and this is really what he had to say about it.
These were great people. These are people like yourselves. These were people that want to make America great again. That's all it is. It's very simple. And they were pouring into the arena, good arena, everything nice, and all of a sudden, a planned attack just came out of nowhere, printed by people that were professional people. If you look at the posters, they're all printed. They have a mark on them, who made them. All done by a group, all very professionally done. A disgrace, if you want to know the truth. And with these thousands of people, and fortunately, a lot of them know, don't go, because we would have had a problem like you wouldn't have believed.
So who were these professional people that created this planned attack? Well, this is what Trump said.
The people that came there were so nice. And let me tell you, the people that were there, that came there, that were invited there, thousands and thousands of people, they caused no problem. They were taunted. They were harassed by these other people. These other people, by the way, some represented Bernie, our communist friend. Now, really, Bernie should tell his people. There weren't too many Hillary people there. You know why? I mean, in all fairness to Bernie, the reason there weren't Hillary people, they have no fervor. There's no fervor. Say what you want about Bernie. At least they have a little bit of fervor, right?
Well, Sanders, who appeared in the southwest suburban suburb of Summit on Friday night, Sanders went after Trump in a theme that frankly became kind of the theme of the weekend, that the real estate mogul and former TV reality star is divisive.
What this campaign is about is bringing our people together. Not letting Donald Trump or anybody else divide us up. No, we are not going to hate Mexicans. We're not going to hate Muslims. We're not going to insult women. We're not going to insult veterans. We're not going to insult African Americans. We are going to bring our people together.
That was Bernie Sanders in Summit at Argo Community High School on Friday night. And I never thought I would hear as a cheer phrase, Bob Sector, we're not going to hate in a political rally.
Well, things are different this year, no doubt about it.
And what is the difference? I mean, throughout yesterday, you had Trump's Republican opponents and his Democratic rivals on the Democratic side. We're all around this central issue of here is Donald Trump. He's a divider. He's not a uniter.
Yeah, and
I think Donald Trump has united all of Democrats, Republicans, Mexicans, veterans, women, everybody against him.
Well, and Pat Brady, we've talked about this too, is that following Mitt Romney's loss in 2012, Reince Priebus, the RNC chairman, did what's known as the autopsy. Where did Republicans go wrong? And the autopsy says you have to grow the party. You have to, you have to be inclusive, bring in people and grow the party. And Donald Trump has taken that autopsy / playbook and just burned it.
Yeah, he's dangerous. And all the groups that we were trying to attract after that autopsy, Donald Trump has insulted. And I listened to the two clips there. I'm like, wow, for the first time in my life, the Democrat was a lot more appealing. Donald Trump is dangerous to the democracy, dangerous to the Republican Party. I think we can send a message in Illinois on Tuesday and vote for anybody but Trump on the Republican side. Hopefully the same happens in Ohio.
Now, and let's point out, in fairness, Pat is a supporter of Ohio Governor John Kasich. And we kind of have this interesting situation that developed, again, over the weekend with Marco Rubio in Florida, and that's where he stayed. It's his home state. It's a must-win state for him. And he said, for his supporters in Ohio, don't vote for me. Vote for John Kasich.
And Kasich kind of walked away from that. He said, thanks, Marco, but we don't need your help. But it is interesting that he would do that. But you'll probably talk about the map of the delegate map here and what this means tomorrow. Tomorrow is Tuesday is probably the most important day in this election cycle that we're going to see, because a lot of people may be leaving, or this may get extended to the convention.
Yeah, I want to take up something that Pat said. He said, you're hoping that people vote for anybody but Trump on Tuesday. The problem with that is that because there are still a number of people on the ballot, that dividing up the vote is what's helping Trump, because his people are going to vote for him come hell or high water. And the anti-Trump crowd is going to fracture their vote. So Trump's going to ride that math to victory, likely.
Pat?
Well, the reality is, though, that right now, other than Trump, I don't think any of the rest of them have a clear path to get to the 1237. So the strategy is everybody get as many as you can and get this to an open or brokered convention. I'm not sure if Kasich or Rubio could actually get there, given where they are right now.
But do you, Pat, and I actually, Ben Ginsburg wrote a piece on Politico yesterday, which, and Ben's a noted attorney, Republican Party attorney, was involved in the recount with George W. Bush, wrote a lengthy piece about what the road to Cleveland looks like if Donald Trump does not get the delegate math that's necessary to win the nomination. And this looks like a mess, a true mess that Cleveland could be come this summer.
It's a reporter's dream, Rick. but you know, one thing, obviously, Democrats, you know, we have a spirited contest on our side, but one thing that is sort of evident is, you know, Donald Trump is not a new phenomenon. Everything that, that folks have been saying about his business, his divisiveness, his the way he treats people, his sort of, you know, self-importance, this has all been known. What's fascinating to sort of observe from, you know, the other side of the aisle here is why nobody did anything before, you know, Super Tuesday, or, you know, I don't know if we're Super Tuesday anymore, but before this Tuesday's primaries, before Iowa. I mean, there was more money spent attacking Marco Rubio, Jeb Bush, Chris Christie, and Ted Cruz than there was Donald Trump. So, you know, unfortunately, the predicament that the Republican Party is in right now is entirely of their own making.
That's Tom Bowen. We've also got Pat Brady on the phone and my great friend Bob Sector here in studio. I'm Rick Pearson, a special our Super Tuesday roundtable. It is a Super Tuesday here in Illinois. Our pre-primary roundtable continues. First, we're going to take a break. This is the Sunday Spin. Now turning to 7:48 on this Sunday morning. I'm Rick Pearson. This is your Sunday Spin. And I'm joined here by my good friend Bob Sector, formerly of the Tribune, Pat Brady, former state Republican chairman and co-founder of Next Generation Strategies, and Tom Bowen, Democratic consultant, founder of New Chicago Consulting. We were talking about the Republican presidential race, Donald Trump factor, and Marco Rubio, who's been, as I said, focused on Florida because it's a winner-take-all state. Ohio is a winner-take-all state. That's why John Kasich is primarily staying there as part of the let's upset Trump routine. Illinois is not a winner-take-all state, but Rubio was in Florida, and here are his remarks on the Donald Trump debacle.
This is what a culture and a society looks like when everybody says whatever the heck they want. When everyone just goes around saying, I'm just going to speak my mind. If I'm angry, it gives me the right to say or do anything I want. Well, there are other people that are angry, too. And if they speak out and say whatever they want, the result is it all breaks down. It's called chaos. It's called anarchy. And that's what we're careening towards in our political process. We should. The great thing about our republic is that we settle our differences in this country at the ballot box, not with guns or bayonets or violence. And you wonder whether we're headed in a different direction today, where we're no longer able or capable of having differences of opinion, but in fact now protests become a license to take violence, to take on your opponents physically. I think forget about the election for a moment. There's a broader issue in our political culture in this country, and this is what happens when a leading presidential candidate goes around feeding into a narrative of anger and bitterness and frustration. And I think we all need to take a step back and ask ourselves, are we contributing to this?
That was Marco Rubio yesterday in Florida. Bob Sector?
I just listening to that and saying, where was that guy during this whole presidential campaign run-up? I mean, that's the most reasonable thing I've heard that man say in months. And, you know, it took till his campaign is hanging by a thread to actually say it.
Well, this goes back to Tom Bowen. What you said is kind of where's everybody been until like Super Tuesday occurred.
Yeah, and you know, one thing that's been very apparent about Republican primaries across the country, and this has been going on for multiple years, is there's a very, homogenous sort of thought in those primaries where if you're not a conservative, if you're not sort of hostile to the president, you're sort of soundly rejected. And, you know, there has been quite a bit of money spent by some very wealthy interests that, you know, have been kind of stirring this pot for several years. So the anger's boiling over. And what Marco Rubio just said wouldn't be rewarded with, you know, the 20, 25, 35% of the vote he would have needed to win Iowa. So, you know, they didn't know how to handle this Trump phenomenon from the beginning because, you know, you're not rewarded by being moderate in Republican primaries. They kind of always, you know, in polling, we see, you know, conservative, moderate, liberal ratios. We see 90% conservative, 10% moderate, and no liberals at all.
Pat Brady, what is Tom correct?
I don't think entirely. I don't think you're ever going to see too many liberals voting in a Republican primary. And I do remember when George Bush was president, the attacks that he endured from the Democrats. I do agree, though, that Donald Trump has tapped into this anger of about 32-33% of the Republican electorate. And I do agree. I wish these guys would have said things earlier. But the reality is he's got that 32-33%. That no matter what you say about Donald, it just makes him stronger. And no matter what he says, however stupid or incendiary or inciting violence, they love him even more. So that's why the strategy is, hey, he's going to get his number. Let's just see if we can either divide it up or get a consensus candidate, because that's the only way we're going
to
stop him.
Well, and I tend to think that nobody went after him because, like most of us, no one thought he was going to stick around very long.
I certainly didn't either, but it didn't work anyway. These people, he's still only getting, at the tops, 35% of the vote. So those people aren't going anywhere. You can't convince them. You have to convince the other 65% to support one of the other candidates.
Well, yeah, I just want to say, I mean, just take a slightly different look at what Tom said earlier. The phenomenon is, to some extent, maybe not as extreme, but it's also true in Democratic primaries, too. You wouldn't... Hillary Clinton, because Bernie Sanders is really far to the left, is going more to the left. You've got to hit certain marks in order to, you know, to appeal to the most extreme parts of your party.
Well, I'm just looking right now at my Twitter feed, okay, and Donald J. Trump, who tweets like crazy. Bernie Sanders is lying when he says his disruptors aren't told to go to my events. Be careful, Bernie, or my supporters will go to yours. This is like in this age, it's like political trolling is just totally acceptable.
But
that's a phenomenon. That's a phenomenon that I think Trump is uniquely bringing to the field. That, you know, there's snarkiness between political aides, but, you know, the sort of the way he does it is new. I want to say one quick thing to Bob's point. There's definitely some truth that Bernie's campaign has, you know, brought to bear issues where Hillary's emphasized a more liberal position than she probably would have were he not there. But back to my sort of point about, you know, the composition of primaries. Democratic primaries actually have a much more even break of, you know, sort of the three flanks, liberal, moderate, and conservatives. We do have conservatives that vote in Democratic primaries. We have quite a bit of moderates, and we also have quite a bit of liberals. So the way Hillary moved to create her coalition was emphasize, you know, her battles over the years with child health and welfare. She moved very quickly to get organized labor endorsements. And, you know, the Democratic tent is a sort of very big tent, and, you know, coalitions like LGBT communities, women's issues communities, Hispanic issues communities. She moved to sort of corral those folks as quickly as possible, and having, you know, many years in service helped her do that. But obviously, Bernie has tapped into a, you know, tremendous amount of energy with young people. And that's propelling him forward.
We've got a call from Ann. Ann, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Hi, good morning. I've been listening to, I'm sure a lot of people are listening to this. I found it disgusting. This is not Chicago, it's Cook County. And Gutierrez and Cardenas. I thought that was, you know, people are here illegally and they interfere with the free elections here. I never saw anything like this. And Donald Trump, he should have known it, but I think he wanted to appeal to the young people, like, Sanders. But, you know, it's a free election in the United States. It looks like people are discriminating against white men of European descent. Now, people see it all different kind of ways, but I don't see how anybody who doesn't vote wanted to be against free elections. United States candidates for presidency.
All right, Ann. Thank you very much for your call. I mean, truly, the Friday night cancellation of the Trump event has been kind of a catalyst. And, you know, in our story, in the Tribune and our Sunday story, raised the question of, you know, what does this do for Donald Trump? And we're going to explore that throughout the show. Right now, though, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN.
Now, The Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. 8:05 on Central Daylight Time on this Sunday morning, dreary, drizzly Sunday morning in downtown Chicago. It's also pre-election Sunday, pre-primary election Sunday. And so we're doing our roundtable here, pre-election roundtable, with Bob Sector, who's a retired member of the Tribune's political team, Tom Bowen, the founder of New Chicago Consulting, a Democratic consultant, and Pat Brady, the former state Republican chairman and co-founder of Next Generation Strategies. I wanted to play this cut about Kasich. I know, Pat, you're a Kasich supporter, but John Kasich has been somewhat reluctant to get into the mud. He doesn't want to get in the mud, he says, and he hasn't really stepped up criticism of Donald Trump until now.
Donald Trump has created a toxic environment. And a toxic environment has allowed his supporters and those who sometimes seek confrontation to come together in violence. There is no place for this. There is no place for a national leader to prey on the fears of people who live in our great country. I'm pleased to see that the other candidates in the last debate began to realize that name-calling, that lowering the bar on American politics is not acceptable.
That's Ohio Governor John Kasich. You know, another factor in all of this is just kind of the swearing factor of Donald Trump rallies. And yesterday during the Dayton rally, when Trump was talking about the cancellation of his rally in Chicago, someone in the crowd shouted, "Expletive Chicago." And Trump laughed and said, "Well, that's okay." Well, ironically enough, Trump and his rough language is actually the subject of an attack ad from the America Future Fund.
I went to an Ivy League school. I'm very highly educated. I know words. I had the best words.
Listen, you mother...
He gets the nomination. They're going to sue his ass. She said he's a put...
I don't give a...
We'll beat the s*** out of them.
They're ripping the s*** out of the sea.
Bullshit. What the hell are we doing?
You're not going to raise that... Christ.
I had the best words.
And you can tell them to go themselves.
American Future Fund Political Action is responsible for the content of this advertising.
I really hate to do that on a Sunday morning, but I have to tell you, I think that is actually one of the best ads out there. We've got a call from Greg. Greg, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Appreciate the dialogue and the political scene. A couple of days ago, I went to the Vernon Hills rally for Hillary, and I just wanted to share with you kind of a contrast of experiences. And when I drove there, I wasn't anticipating that there would be a huge number of folks there, because given some of the media coverage about Hillary and the campaign being like a little lackluster energy. So I got there about 5:30, 5 o'clock, and already there were thousands of people in line. So I stood in line. I thought, okay, well, I'm not going to have a great chance of getting into the line. And sure enough, another thousands of people were behind me. But what I found really interesting was that we were, you know, white, black, Asian, no matter who we are, young, old, everybody got along. And people were interacting positively. So I go through the line, and I'm up there waiting. And then all of a sudden, about 10 feet from the actual entrance, after we saw her motorcade pass by, the fire marshal came out and closed off the rest of the venue to the folks outside because they exceeded the fire code. So people outside just kind of like clustered in little groups, listened to the speakers outdoors, and were real excited. But it was just a positive energy, excitement. And I just really appreciated that.
All right, Greg, thank you very much. And, you know, that Tom Bowen, that is a factor I think people wonder about on the Democratic side, is about Democratic turnout. And, you know, you have that issue of the fact that Bernie Sanders is certainly has the youth vote, but he's also been doing his best to try to cut into Hillary Clinton's support in the African-American community, the Latino community. Big question really is African-American turnout on the Democratic side.
Well, in Chicago, you know, this is actually very predictable. African-Americans turn out much more reliably than sort of any other part of the city. You know, Chicago is about a third African-American, third white, third Hispanic, but the turnout numbers in voting is usually about, you know, 40 African-American, you know, little under 40 white, and then the rest Hispanic. So I think what the Clinton folks are planning for on Election Day in Illinois, obviously, you know, there's more than just Chicago to this piece, but they're planning for a big turnout in the African-American community because it traditionally votes. It is a long part of the community's history in our state. The change that we're seeing is twofold on the Democratic side. The younger cohort is also really big. The millennial generation is as large, if not larger, based on some demographers' analysis, than baby boom generation. And they're turning out in a little bit higher numbers because some combination, I think, of Mr. Sanders' message, and also he just does not look like the establishment.
That's one way to put it.
Right. And we all remember what it was like to be young and how the establishment was bad. But the Clinton folks, I think, are relying on traditional Democratic cohorts to put her over the top in Illinois. And, you know, evidence bears out that according to the Tribune's polling and other public polling, we've seen that strategy is working. That's older voters. That's working class voters, African-American voters, and, you know, doing your best to sort of win as many young voters as you can.
Well, what we had in that Tribune poll was a big lead by Hillary Clinton, 67% to 25% for Bernie Sanders. Under age 50 voters, it was 49-46 Clinton, really a tie. But over 50, age 50, 69 to 22 for Hillary Clinton. So, you know, that there is that breakdown. But I also have to wonder, and Tom, maybe, you know, tell me if I'm wrong, but Hillary Clinton is back here on Monday. Bill Clinton is in town today. I was kind of surprised that Hillary Clinton would be back here. I thought, you know, everything was kind of the base was set. And I'm wondering if there aren't some concerns about, you know, he's ramped up his advertising big time. You know, lately he's been going after Mayor Emanuel as part of a kind of an attack strategy against Hillary Clinton. I mean, we all know polls are from the snapshot of when they were taken, but I'm almost wondering if they aren't kind of sensing something going on, particularly after Michigan.
Yeah, a little bit, but I think the big thing here is just Illinois has a lot of Democratic delegates. It's also symbolic. It's the president's home state. It is a state she's from. It's where she has relationships, and, you know, we're fortunate in that we're the crossroads of the country travel-wise, so it's not hard to get here quickly. You can do, you know, fundraising while you're here. I mean, there's many factors. But, no, I think the Michigan race was a surprise to them. You know, they are just, at this point, taking nothing for granted. And don't forget, you know, our rules are a little complex. In certain districts, you can win more delegates. A congressional district on the south side, you know, you can win 8-9 delegates compared to some of the districts downstate. And when you win those majorities of delegates, you get bonus delegates, the PLEOs, we call them. So there's lots of incentive to be here. And Florida, you know, it's you hit Chicago, you can hit, you know, I should know this number off the top of my head, but I don't. But if you hit the Chicago media market, you can hit six or seven congressional districts with one news broadcast. In Florida, you need to go to three or four media markets to do that. So we're nice and condensed, and it makes sense electorally.
Yeah, I mean, we've got 182 delegates overall on the Democratic side that are up for grabs on Tuesday. We've got 69 Republican delegates on that side. Complicated rules, and we'll explain those to you on how that works. Unfortunately, it will be a bit dry, but we'll do it very quickly. But we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, and I'm speaking with Bob Sector, retired member of the Tribune's political team, Tom Bowen, founder of New Chicago Consulting, who's a Democratic consultant, Pat Brady, who's the former state Republican chairman, co-founder of Next Generation Strategies. Gentlemen, allow me 2 minutes. I'm going to do my quick primer on how delegates are picked in Illinois, okay? So if anybody wants to go run out and get some coffee, you're welcome to it. But real quickly, so in Illinois, on the Republican side, 69 delegates at stake. 15 are determined by the party. Those 15 actually go to the winner of the presidential preference part of the ballot. But for the most part, we call the presidential preference on the Republican ballot a beauty contest, because the bulk of the delegates, 54 of them, are actually directly picked by the voters. There are three Republican delegates running in each of the 18 congressional districts in Illinois. Voters have to directly elect them. Okay. Now, the Democrat side, forget everything I just said, because it's pretty crazy, okay? So there's 182 total delegates at stake in Illinois. 102 of those are selected by the voters, in part. So what you have to do is, in each of the state's 18 congressional districts, there are varying numbers of delegates for each candidate based on the number of eligible delegates based on previous turnout for Democrat support. You cast a vote for those delegates, but what really determines the delegates is how well each candidate for president does in each of the congressional districts. Democratic delegates are awarded proportionally based on how well Democratic candidates do for president do in a district, and you have to get at least 15% support to be eligible for a delegate. That having been said, the determination of those delegates also is gender balanced. So even though someone might vote for two Republican candidates for Hillary Clinton at the top, it's got to go boy, girl, boy, girl, boy, girl. Bottom line, and another cautionary note, too, the folks behind Bernie Sanders' campaign in Illinois filed one extra delegate than the maximum in 12 of the state's congressional districts. If you're voting an optical scan ballot and you just mark down all of the Bernie Sanders delegates, when you go and file that ballot, it's going to bounce back that you overvoted on the delegates. You then have the choice of going back and revoting your entire ballot or not having the Bernie Sanders delegates count. Now, bottom line is, that's really not a big deal, because even if Sanders didn't field delegates in a congressional district and got more than 15% of the vote, the state party would then award the delegates. So there's my 2-minute primer. Sorry, you can come back to the radio now.
So is there going to be a quiz on this later?
Unfortunately, that's the problem. I have to know this stuff, and that's why I say.
Rick, it's actually one thing just for the listeners to understand. When you vote, and I'm speaking from the Democratic side because that's where I vote, you actually will see the delegate's name, Bob Smith, and you will see Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders next to it. So for your vote for president to count at the Democratic National Convention, you have to vote for the actual delegates in addition to saying you're voting for either Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders. And I believe that is the same on the Republican side, but Pat can confirm for me.
Well, go ahead, Pat.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it is. Yes, it is.
Yeah, the name of the presidential contender that the delegate is supporting is in parentheses behind the delegate candidate's name. But speaking of delegates, I mean, Pat, what are we looking forward to in Cleveland?
You mean the insofar as the convention?
Yes.
Well, that article you were talking about that Ben Ginsburg, the Republican electoral guru, wrote, I think explains it best. But if we get to a brokered convention, and this, I'm going to summarize this. You know, only the first round are those delegates actually attached to their candidate, and then it gets incrementally less. But a couple things here in Illinois, I remember, you know, we did this for McCain for a couple of years and other campaigns. A lot of these delegates don't know that they have to actually pay to go to the convention.
Yes, that's true.
You lose a lot of delegates. People that might have been hardcore Trump people, I'm like, well, you know, I'm not going to pay the money to go. So there's a lot of back and forth on who is actually going to be there versus the people that you might actually vote for. And those 15 you talked about beyond the 54, those go to whoever wins the beauty contest. But the actual delegates themselves are selected by the campaign and state party. So they may not be hardcore Trumpites if Trump wins.
We've got a call from Ryan. Ryan, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Thank you. I had a question actually about delegates and the congressional apportionment, because I'm a Kasich supporter. I think I like him the best of the non-Trump candidates for the Republicans, but I'm willing to vote for either of the three, depending on what would be best for my district to make sure that Trump doesn't get the delegates. So I live in the 11th district, but I'm also wondering, you know, out in Aurora, I'm wondering more generally, though, which districts are most likely to go for Cruz or Kasich. Seems at this point that Rubio's an afterthought, but if I could get your thoughts on that, I'd appreciate it.
All right, Ryan.
I think for all the time I've been doing Rick Pearson's show, you are the wisest caller that's ever called in as a Kasich supporter.
As the Kasich supporter says, yes. But okay, Brady, you got your commission now. What advice would you offer Ryan? Who do you see the delegates going where?
Yes, in that district, that stick with Kasich. I mean, I encourage anybody right now to stick with Kasich. I think Kasich's got a chance, and if he can win, no, I mean that sincerely, if he wins Ohio, then he's the guy that will be the guy to go head-to-head with Trump. And Ted Cruz, he has a lot of support, but I don't think Ted Cruz could win a general election. He is way too far to the right.
Well, our Tribune poll was Trump 32, Cruz 22, Rubio 21, Kasich 18. Now, we had Super Tuesday after that poll. You know, Rubio is a question mark about support. I think there probably has been some movement among Republican moderates for Kasich, but more to Ryan's point, which congressional district's likely to go where? One thing that we did find in the poll, and I tend to think this is still a case, even though Trump has a lead statewide, that downstate, the race is much closer, Trump 29, Cruz 27. And downstate, more rural, which, you know, at first blush you'd think would be pro-Trump, but actually it's also more evangelical, and that's where Cruz gets his support. So I think, you know, downstate is more likely to be a Cruz factor.
It's a little like Iowa. I
mean, well,
very much, it abuts Iowa, Missouri.
Downstate is much like Iowa. Pat, I don't know if
where,
you...
That's where the last time when Santorum won those ones. You go south of 64, that's Santorum kind of Cruz country. But remember, most of the delegates in Cook and the Collars. So, I mean, you got two congressional districts down there, whereas you have, you know, seven or eight up north of I-80.
Right. And
Rick, I think the best advice we can give your callers is probably Rubio is fading. So a vote for Rubio is probably wasting your opportunity to stop Trump. I think Cruz and Kasich in the northern part of the state are fairly even. So go with your heart there. And I think you're probably right that downstate, if you're going to vote against Trump and stop him, your best bet is Cruz.
We're going to continue with our political roundtable. We're going to take a quick break, though. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. Up ahead, we'll continue our political roundtable, all things politics, everything on the ballot on Tuesday's Illinois primary.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. We're moving to 8:36 Central Daylight Time on this Sunday morning as we continue our political roundtable. Bob Sector, a retired member of the Tribune's political team, here with me in the Allstate Showcase studio. On the phone, Tom Bowen, Democratic consultant, founder of New Chicago Consulting, and Pat Brady, former Illinois Republican chairman and co-founder of Next Generation Strategies. Gentlemen, I want to get off the presidential race for a bit, because there's a lot more on the ballot, particularly so on the Democratic side. We're looking at a contested primary for the Democratic nomination for United States Senate. Three people. We've got Tammy Duckworth, the congresswoman from the West Northwest suburbs, former Chicago Urban League CEO Andrea Zopp, State Senator Napoleon Harris of Harvey. They're all competing for the nomination to take on Mark Kirk, who has nominal primary opposition. Duckworth is the favorite of party regulars. I have to tell you, when we did our Tribune poll, I was very surprised that Tammy Duckworth had over 70% support. Bob Sector?
Yeah, I mean, that is surprising, because I don't think she is all that well-known outside of her congressional district. But
she is.
But, well, apparently she is. And, you know, so obviously this, again, another issue. This is a year when the pundits and the experts don't know what they're talking about.
Tom Bowen, how do you see that race shaping up?
You know, Congresswoman Duckworth's story has been very powerful, and we've all known this since 2006 when she first came on the scene. You know, she had a spirited primary contest in 2012 against Raja Krishnamurti.
Right.
And you know, the numbers didn't, you know, crack even a bit. So she has had millions of dollars of advertising run for and against her in this market. And, you know, don't forget, when you run a Republican ad against a Democrat, that makes Democrats a Republican candidate runs an ad against a Democratic candidate, that makes the Democrats, you know, go home to the Democrats. So in a way, Mark Kirk starting to advertise against her probably hardened up some support for her. So this isn't surprising to most of us who watch politics in Illinois. That she would win handily in this race. I think the story of your polling there is just sort of how little impact the campaigns of Ms. Zopp and Mr. Harris have been.
Pat Brady, the fact that early on Kirk started running ads and the Kirk campaign, reelection campaign, was going after Tammy Duckworth, was that in an effort to weaken her, try to weaken her, or is it just to get a head start on the general election race?
I think it's probably both. I mean, when you dig deep with Tammy Duckworth, there are some issues I think that Mark's going to be able to make some very effective ads with. And, you know, she goes lockstep with the Obama National Security Foreign Policy Agenda, and that's Mark's area of expertise. And a lot of people in the state don't particularly care for the direction of the country in that respect. So I think it's just time to, you know, point these things out, and we'll see what happens in the fall.
We've got a call from Ron. Ron, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Yeah, good morning. I want you all to comment on the state's attorney's race. We hear about the proxy fight between Rauner and Madigan in the senatorial race, but I'm really looking at Tony Craigwinkle. Although I know Kim Fox has received a lot of support from elected officials, Tony Preckwith appears to be the most prominent. And I know she did back the city treasurer. So just kind of want to see, maybe is this going to lead her to something else? But just comment on her role in the state attorney race. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Ron. And in fact, we were going to go there next, to the state's attorney's race, which is a significant race here in Cook County, where you've got Anita Alvarez seeking a third term. Of course, an early Tribune poll had her up by single digits over Kim Fox. Donna Moore, an attorney, also running in that race. And yes, Kim Fox, former chief of staff to Tony Preckwinkle. Tony Preckwinkle almost single-mindedly worked to make sure that Kim Fox would get the endorsement of the Cook County Democratic Organization. Frankly, Tony Preckwinkle's a lot more political than I think most people think.
And she also has a really bad track record of being a kingmaker. So in other races, previous races, she's not done very well in her support. This one might be a little different, but, you know, Anita Alvarez has not helped her own case, and that's, you know, maybe why Kim Fox is lucking out here.
Tom Bowen, how do you see that shaping up? I mean, the Laquan McDonald video release and the circumstances surrounding the charges of police officer Jason Van Dyke 400 days after that shooting. And Anita Alvarez has tried to say, well, look, I was working with the U.S. Attorney's Office. We were going to try to jointly file charges. You know, that there's a legitimate case to be made about that. But at the same time, her opponents say,
look, she's botched this. She botched the handling of that, you know, in a terrible fashion. And those of us that watch politics in Illinois, especially Cook County, will remember how she handled a previous case in a 60 Minutes interview. That was really one of the worst things I've ever seen a public figure say in how she handled new evidence in a trial. And, you know, this race is about her. And I think when voters made the decision, there's no way that they'll be supporting her for reelection. They're looking for who's next. And what happened in this race is, you know, the Tony Preckwinkle is actually very popular with voters. But what happened in this race was they were looking for who the right Democrat is, and all the Democrats are with Kim Fox because Donna Moore has no history or relationship with the Democratic Party. So it's really that simple. I'm fairly confident that Ms. Fox is going to win, and she's going to win handily.
Pat Brady, you're an attorney. What do you think the Democrats are going to do?
Well, here's it. Also, I'm not only an attorney, I spent 11 years as a federal and state prosecutor, and as just a citizen of the state and of the country, not a Democrat or Republican, it's disturbing to me that the chief law enforcement officer, the attorney general, is the daughter of the head of the Democratic Party in Illinois. And just, I think Kim Fox will win handily, too. I agree with Bob, but was the handpicked former chief of staff of arguably the most powerful Democrat in Cook County. So to me, the bigger question is, who's the people that we are putting in these offices? Are they really serving the public interest, or are they serving long-term political interests?
Well, and I mean, this is a very important job. I mean, to be the top prosecutor in Cook County, which includes Chicago, at a time where we're seeing all kinds of concerns about the criminal justice system, concerns about rising crime, about the number of shootings and homicides that have gone up in this state. How do you think that plays into this, Bob?
Listen, Anita blew this from the get-go. That's maybe some people over at City Hall, too. This has been terrible, but this has been the head-scratcher with me with African-Americans supporting the Democratic Party in the state. I mean, they're the architects of all these bad policies, including the 50% youth unemployment rate. And to rally to Hillary or Bernie or whomever, to me, it's just mind-boggling. And it's a huge problem, and I think any Republican that gets ahead of the curve and talking about reforming our criminal justice system, which is badly in need of reform, I think has an issue that can broaden the appeal of conservative candidates.
All right, Pat, but I don't hear many Republicans talking about that issue.
Yeah, well, there is some discussion of reforming the criminal justice system, both on the national level and here in the state level. But I think there's such a gulf of distrust between Republicans and minority communities. You know, you have, on the one hand, you know, Governor Rauner can talk about reforming the criminal justice system. On the other hand, he's summarily cutting child care benefits for the working poor, which, you know, disproportionately hurts African-American and Latino women. So,
that's not accurate, though, Bob. But he's not summarily cutting those benefits. There's a budget impasse right now, and the governor has compromised on 44, 45 of his things he ran and was elected on in a landslide in this state. And the speaker won't agree to a budget. So
to say that he's summarily cutting it, that's just not accurate.
Well, I disagree with you.
But what is accurate, Pat, is the 44 things that he asked for were so unbelievable and insane in a supermajority Democratic legislature.
All right, gentlemen, hold on, okay? Because we try not to do the show like Fox News here, okay?
It's like UIC.
But we're going to actually...
He asked for things that couldn't be done.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about Governor Rauner, Speaker Madigan, and the proxy war going on in the 5th Legislative District. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. Some new poll numbers coming in from CBS News. Illinois, Trump 38, Cruz 34, Kasich 16, Rubio 11. This is a CBS poll. Also on the Democratic side, take it for what it is, Bernie Sanders 48, Clinton 46, the CBS News YouGov poll. Not exactly sure how the poll was conducted here, but...
Is that an internet poll?
That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah.
Because
it is. It's an online poll, Rick.
Okay, so take that for what it is then, yeah. Because those are typically less reliable, come from a pre-chosen sample of people and participants. So, that's that. Gentlemen, I want to talk quickly about the issue of the proxy war, the Bruce Rauner versus Mike Madigan contest that... those aren't the names on the ballot, but it's Ken Duncan and Julietta Stratton in the Democratic primary. This, to me, is unheard of. This is a Democratic state legislative primary that has gotten a presidential endorsement from President Obama for Stratton that involves in money over $5 million. And remember, we have 177 House seats, okay? This is just one. This is crazy, Bob.
Yeah, it's crazy, all right. But we're seeing, you know, part of it is that this incredible injection of money into everything. You've got a lot of countervailing forces on both sides. Rauner clearly wants to prop up Duncan because Duncan has helped Rauner. Madigan, you know, I think last time I was on the show, we talked about this. You know, it's unlikely that Mike Madigan is going to hold on to what is theoretically called a veto-proof majority, even though it really isn't veto-proof, only because he's at the zenith of his power. And, you know, odds are going to tell you that that's going to wane some, but he's still going to have a majority. And, you know, so Madigan losing a seat or two is probably not going to make a lot of difference to him. But, you know, this is, we like to talk about what's happened in this Madigan-Rauner thing as a who's is bigger contest. And we thought that was kind of weird until Trump and Rubio actually literally injected that into politics. So.
Tom Bowen, how do you see that race shaping up?
I think Julianna Stratton is going to be successful because, I think there's a habit in Illinois politics to make everything about Speaker Madigan, and it's a lot bigger than that. It's about organized labor. It's about environmental interests. It's about, you know, pro-choice movement. And like I said before at the top of the show, you know, we're a big tent in the Democratic side. And I think the answer here is it's the Democratic Party versus Bruce Rauner. And by the way, it's in our, you know, primary. It's kind of turf that I think it was very foolish for the governor to even play in, regardless of what Mr. Duncan was doing, who obviously is a longstanding member of the party and has chosen to abandon them. But the answer here is, do we get to pick our own nominee? And I think at the end of the day, most voters are going to be, well, of course we do. The association with the governor is absolute killer to Mr. Duncan, and I feel that he's going to be defeated.
Pat Brady, Ken Duncan has been the person who has denied Madigan that 71 magic number, that 71 that's needed for a veto-proof majority. And it's Rauner allies who are largely, involved in funding Duncan's campaign. Should Republicans be playing in a Democratic sandbox?
Well, it's kind of funny that Tom would say that, given that Madigan puts a fake Republican up in his district virtually every year. So this has been going on for a long, long time. I don't know what is going to happen in that race, but it further to suggest that the Democratic Party is not wholly owned by Mike Madigan, funded by the trial lawyers and labor. I mean, I don't think it's exactly stating how it is. I mean, Madigan controls the party. He controls all these elections. He controls the money. So it is Mike Madigan's war, and it's the war that he's fighting right now.
Mike Madigan also has a primary opponent, Jason Gonzalez. Mm-hmm. And to agree with Pat, and certainly it was never unusual for Mike Madigan to put up somebody on the ballot to block, you know, block a legitimate opponent before. But now you have Jason Gonzalez, and you know, it's interesting race, but I don't see Mike Madigan losing this.
Probably not. I mean, I think that is true that Madigan's played these games. They play these games on both sides of the aisle. Now you've got a guy in Rahner who's got a lot of funding, so he can play it better than Madigan opponents in the past. What I find fascinating in all this is that some of the other players involved, there's this organization called Illinois Go, which is run by a guy named Greg Goldner, who essentially in the past has been Rahm Emanuel's black ops guy. And the funniest part I saw in some of the advertising is Duncan is now talking about leading the charge to get rid of speed cameras and red light cameras. And Greg Goldner was the front guy for Redflex, the corrupt red light camera company. So it's very odd.
Yes, well, weird things happen on election times. That's for sure. Well, gentlemen, real quick predictions Tuesday in the presidential primary, starting with Bob Sector.
Oh God, you know I hate to make predictions because we're always wrong.
You can now.
We're always wrong. I can, but I. You know, that poll is that you just cited, you know, makes you wonder. Who knows?
But I mean, it's an internet poll.
It's an internet poll. But, you know, we all thought Hillary Clinton was going to sweep Michigan, and she did not. You know, I suspect looking out farther, I don't see Bernie Sanders winning the nomination. But he's going to make it difficult for her, just like she made it difficult for Barack Obama in 2008.
All right. Quickly, Pat Brady.
All I'll say is a Republican, any vote for Donald Trump's a vote to destroy the party and bad for the country. This guy has got to be stopped. So I'm a Kasich guy, but vote for anybody but Trump.
On the Democrat side, Pat?
Oh, on the Democrat side, I think Hillary wins.
All right, Tom Bowen.
I don't believe that poll, yeah.
I think Hillary will do well, especially in the Chicago districts, and she'll win vast majority of delegates in Illinois. And on the Republican side, I'm going to go with the polls here and say Trump will win vast majority of the congressional districts. Cruz will come in second and win some delegates. Rubio and Kasich, I think, are going to do very poorly.
All right, gentlemen, thank you so very, very much. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. That's all we have time for on this week's edition of The Sunday Spin. I want to thank my guests, Bob Sector, retired partner of mine on the Tribune's political team, Tom Bowen, the founder of New Chicago Consulting, a Democratic consultant, and Pat Brady, the former state Republican chairman and co-founder of Next Generation Strategies. Most of all, I want to thank all of you for listening. And, you know, remember, Tuesday, primary day, cast your vote. And now it's time for the great Dean Richards.
Because Tuesday is Rick's favorite day of the year.
Oh, it's my tax day. I feel like the accountant in tax season right now.
I know the feeling. I know the feeling. Really interesting show today of all the different opinions on this insane period that we're going through.
It really is. And you know, normally Illinois is not really a relevant factor in presidential primary elections.
Right.
So I think it's actually great when folks get a chance to see what it's like to be in a real primary state, which, you know, I get to see all the time, but most people here don't.
That mean all the political TV commercials will be going away soon. I'm all for it.
Yes, it will. Starting on Wednesday, we can get back to our normal programming.
Well, before I start my normal programming today, I just want to say if anything goes wrong on the show today, I'm blaming Bernie Sanders for it right now, just so it's clear up front. It's not my fault. It's not our listeners' fault. I blame it all on
Bernie. It's not your rhetoric.
It's not my rhetoric at all.